Good morning. So audio seems good despite the dramatics. So I got back from a street retreat 2 weeks ago, and I want to talk about that today. It was led this, I think that this is about my fifth, perhaps, street retreat. It's become a bit of a thing for me. There, all of the ones that I've done have been led by Genro Roshi, a Dharma brother of Enkyo Roshi and student of Bernie Glassman, who runs the Hudson River Zen Peacemaker Center up in the Bronx. Some of you may have met him. He gave a talk during Urban Sishin a few months ago. And he leads street retreats and bearing witness retreats in Rwanda and Auschwitz and the Black Hills, a sacred site for the Lakota. So all of these sites of traumatized people, all of these opportunities to bear witness to people in suffering. The retreat was led by Genro, and also for maybe the third year in a row, we had Batman with us. Batman is this wonderful guy, black man, late middle age. He's been homeless for decades. He's been living in an apartment for the last few years, but for many, many years, he was living under the Manhattan Bridge, which is where he met Bernie Glassman and became a Zen student of Bernie's. He's slept on sidewalks in Washington Square area for years and years and years. He knows Lower Manhattan like no one I have ever met. He has spent years finding the best route from any given street corner to any other. He knows everybody, and it makes him a magician. I have seen him hear somebody on a retreat say, "Gosh, I really want a cup of coffee." And Batman just, he knows the guy who has been on that street corner selling coffee. They have stories. They like shared an apartment once, and he will get us 11 cups of coffee for free in minutes. Just anything he needs, he can conjure. He's amazing. The first retreat I did not have Batman on it, and it was a very different experience. Being on a retreat with Batman is like the cruise version. You don't go hungry. So in this retreat, we had 11 people, which is about par. I've been on 15, which is also sort of like a cruise in the sense that you feel like you're on this giant boat that you can't turn very easily. But 11, we could kind of move. And so we did. We didn't eat at soup kitchens very much, and we only went to the Bowery Mission the first night. And other than that, we were just on the move the whole time. By the first morning, we were up eating at this weird place called like Main Chance on 34th Street. You've never seen it. It's very strange. We had to go through metal detectors. I don't think that we'll be going back there. They search our bags. By noon on the first day, we were up on the Upper East Side in the 80s or the 90s, and we took a nap in Central Park, and then we spent our time for maybe 3 days bouncing around on the Upper East and West Sides, mostly just begging at restaurants for food or skipping meals or saving food from one meal to the next rather than going to soup kitchens all the time the way we have in the past. And so it's this experience of never knowing what's going to happen next and just requiring help from somebody for the next thing we need. A place to sleep, a place to go to the bathroom, something to eat, water. And it's always been provided. This experience of begging is really, for me, the central thing about street retreat. When I first did street retreat, I thought that it was, I wasn't so focused on the begging, I thought it was about hardship. I thought it was about being tough. And I think it was maybe 2011-ish when I did my first retreat, or 2012. And the night before, Kayshen and Melissa and I went to Benny's Burritos for dinner. It was an October night. It was cold and it was rainy that night. And I was so frightened because I could see the rain on the windows outside the burrito restaurant, and I thought, tomorrow night, if it's still like this, I'm going to be out in it, and I don't know where I'm going to sleep, and it's going to be terrible. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I was so afraid. And that retreat was kind of tough. It was cold. But I got through it, and the big thing is not about that I proved that I'm tough. The thing that I proved was that other people are generous to me, and that what I need will be offered for free. Even though I don't earn it, I don't exchange anything, I don't prove that I deserve it, it's simply offered. And that experience of what other people are like, when given the opportunity to help me, is the main teaching of street retreat for me. Not that I'm tough enough to do it, not that I'm clever enough to find what I need, but that what I need is given to me. And over time, and I'm not sure why this is, but each street retreat, this just the abundance that's offered is becoming kind of comical. The third night of this last retreat, the 11 of us begged for a dinner at the Union Square Farmers Market on a Saturday afternoon. And so we split up, you pair off, you take that corner, we'll take this row of stands, you take that row of stands, and we'll all go around and we'll say something, kind of up to you. I usually said, I don't have any money, I'm part of a Buddhist group that's on the street experiencing homelessness for a few days, and we need food to feed ourselves for dinner. Can you share anything with us? And Kyosei works at the farmer's market at this empanada stand called Body and Soul. It's really great. I recommend it. And she, from her own generosity, gave us a bunch of empanadas and these like lentil rolls. And this young kid who is part of our group, named Zach, he asked at a baker stand, do you guys have any bread that you're going to throw away? And he came back with a bag so big that he had to carry it on top of his head. It was like a clear 30-gallon trash bag full of sourdough and baguettes and artisanal, just, you know, rosemary, amazing stuff. 10 times what our group could possibly eat. And we got like arugula and heirloom tomatoes, goat cheese for free. It was incredible. And what I noticed particularly with the bread, with receiving more than I need, is this anxiety. I received more than I earned. I received something that I didn't deserve, for which I exchanged nothing. And that anxiety, I think, is really neurotic, and I think it's really built into me. And I think it's really built into being an American, in my opinion. In the course of Zen practice and kind of unpacking my ideas about what I'm worth and what I earn, I think a lot about this book by Max Weber from 1905, The Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism. And excuse me, this is going to get a little bit thinky. But he says that the reason that, or capitalism in a large, to a large extent, was prompted by this Calvinist idea that to work hard, be thrifty and productive, shows that you are holy. It's the same as being a good person. Being a good investor, being a good worker is the same as being a good person. And it shows that God has picked you to go to heaven. And to be generous encourages laziness. So it's actually encouraging sin. And even though I'm a Jewish Zen student, even though most of us in America are not Calvinists, I think that we have this idea about what it is to be a good person, that you have to prove that you're worth what you receive, that you're self-sufficient, that you're square with everybody. It makes us very anxious to receive. And I felt this when Zach came at us with this, like, whole bakery on his head. It's like, oh, shit. How are we going to repay the world for this? It's very abstract because it's a psychological delusion. There's no specific idea of somebody to whom I owe this. It's just like Buddha or Santa Claus or somebody is there and there's a number on the wrong side of the ledger and we have to somehow balance it because we're in debt. And we think of this as debt. I owe a debt of gratitude. I'm in your debt. And we'd rather not receive than experience this. So we ate the food. We had this incredible picnic, the 11 of us, right in the middle of Union Square among the hippies and the Showtime breakdancers and the pot legalization protest and the Hare Krishnas and everybody else. And I find that when we do this picnic, we started off with a Gate of Sweet Nectar ceremony, which is a ceremony to feed the hungry ghosts. At the Zendo, we do it. Do we do it as part of Oban?
Yes, we do.
So we do it about once a year at the Zendo this summer. We'll do it in a few weeks. And on Street Retreat, we do it, I think, every day. Because we're so aware of the generosity that we're receiving, and we do want to broadcast this generosity that we've received to all who may need it. And the hungry ghosts actually show up when we do this in public at Union Square. This one blonde kid came. Something was weird about him. He wasn't homeless, but he said his apartment smelled too bad to sleep in. And he seemed just very lonely. And we asked him, so do you work? And he said, well, I sell stuff on the internet. You don't want to know. Life was not going well for him in some way that I couldn't quite figure out. But he needed a community. Unlike me on a regular day where I'm sort of rushing from one place that I belong to another, occupying each position that I've earned, he and all those who show up to our Gate of Sweet Nectar ceremony are people who are lonely and hungry for something. And we attract them, and we talk to them, and we share our bread. And it's amazing. It's amazing that we come up with something to offer people, even though we have deliberately walked out onto the street with nothing. No money, no phone, not even a change of clothes. And yet there is something that we have to share somehow. What we're there for is bearing witness. It's called a bearing witness retreat. And I want to be really clear that although I've started to think of street retreats as kind of fun, Keisha knows I wasn't looking forward to this one, but I had a good time in retrospect. But usually I'm actually looking forward to them because they're kind of fun. And they're not that hard because people are very generous. But I know that that doesn't mean that like being homeless is awesome and fun. Street retreat is very distinct, and it's relatively easy for me because my privilege is still operating. I know that. I know that being a healthy white male on the street who is not addicted, who does not have mental illness, who is part of a group that cooperates and practices together, we have huge advantages. And we're only out there for 3 days. So of course it's easy. It doesn't mean that being homeless is great. But walking just a mile in the shoes of those who are chronically homeless is a way of bearing witness to the unbelievable suffering of homeless people in New York. The number of them has doubled in the last 10 years. There are now, it's estimated, 50,000 people sleeping in shelters or on the streets every night in New York. And it's still spiking. It's still on the rise. And there's a little more money for the problem than there used to be, but compared to the leviathan of national forces pushing people onto the street, right? Rising rent, rising income inequality, a cycle of poor education, poverty, incarceration, and then people with criminal records who can't get jobs are dumped onto the street, and the cycle renews. And the city's main response seems to be to shove people around, to keep them from ever being able to stop. If you try to sleep anywhere in Lower Manhattan, you'll find that it's been armored. Like, literally, things are lined with spikes so that you can't sleep on them. All of the benches in the subway have these dividers built into them so you can sit, but you can't lie down. And during the day you can sleep on the sidewalk, but at night when you want to sleep, there's a whole system of patrols to go around kicking you out of wherever you found to sleep after half an hour or an hour. So you're chronically sleep deprived, you don't spend enough time horizontal, so your feet swell. I'm reading articles right now about Tompkins Square Park. Everybody has noticed Tompkins Square Park has become a homeless haven. And so we have to deal with this somehow. And the way we are dealing with this is by kicking everybody out of it with no long-term solution for where else they're supposed to be. Just keep moving. It's like alternate side parking, but it's for human beings. I don't care where you go, you just can't stay here for any longer. And my first instinct for this is to try to do something about it. But and doing street retreat does do something for it. It helps us raise a few thousand dollars every year for Coalition for the Homeless, Coalition Against Hunger, Catholic Worker, other organizations. We've donated many thousands of dollars to the Bowery Mission over the years. But when we're actually on the street, we don't really have anything. A friend of mine at work said last year, "It's so great that you're doing these street retreats and helping the homeless." And I said, "But I'm not." And he said, "Oh, you're so humble." Isn't that always the way? But seriously, I'm not. I have nothing. And I think that's actually, I've come to really accept this approach of walking out onto the street with nothing and not helping. Because I don't have the expertise, the sort of standard things to do to volunteer at soup kitchens. If you try, you'll find that there's a waiting list. Everybody wants to volunteer at a soup kitchen. It turns out that ladling food from a tray into a bowl is not the problem. The problem is more complicated than that. So we just go out and we bear witness. And even though what we're doing is not chronic homelessness, it's still a taste of it. It's still different from rushing from home to work and back and dropping some change in someone's cup. It's a chance to wait in line for an hour for a bad meal at 6 a.m. with a bunch of homeless people. And when you're in that situation, you can start to have real conversations that you don't have if you're ladling soup into a bowl, that you don't have if you're dropping a dollar in a cup. And that real meeting is, bearing witness is this sort of abstract and to me frustrating term, but actually being on the street with people is an expression of respect. I don't know what to do, but I'm here with you for a few days, and I'm really going to see what it's like for you. And that's fundamental. That's before donating, activism, all of that, is to actually look at somebody and actually talk to somebody from a position of equality. I don't smell as bad as you, but I'm on my way. I'm going to eat the same food. I slept in the same spot. And I can't help, but I'm here with you. And it's not enough. We have to take action. But it's a necessary beginning, and it is incredibly worthwhile on its own. So that direct encounter with people who, for whom our society is not providing, that's a big part of street retreat. That's a big lesson. But for me, there's this joy of receiving. And I, after a lifetime of not understanding what this word means, I start to understand what the word grace means. I was thinking about it because President Obama, at the funeral in Charleston, talked about grace. He said, "We don't earn grace. We're all sinners. We don't deserve it, but God gives it to us anyway. It's our decision how we respond to it." And when I'm not worried about being square with everybody, when I allow myself to receive, then I can experience grace. Then I can respond to it the obvious way, which is with gratitude. And I particularly got this the second night when we were sleeping in Central Park. We had begged at a bunch of restaurants around the Natural History Museum, and then the group of us went into Central Park to find a place to sleep. This is around West 90th Street, and there's a huge reservoir up there, and it's got banks, so they stay kind of dry because the water runs off them. And there's this kind of big grassy bank on the west side of the park with, it's dotted with trees, and it's got soft grass, and it's kind of removed from any of the paths. So we walked in there, we found a bunch of cardboard on the street and brought it in with us to make beds. And I laid out my cardboard, 3 boxes thick, under a tree. And it was kind of raining a little bit lightly, but it was warm and the tree protected me and I stayed dry. And I could look out in the misty park, and there's these lampposts, and the mist is kind of glowing in the light. And it's all green and silent and misty and spooky. And I was warm and dry and comfortable on my cardboard, and I felt safe. And I thought how grateful I was for this place to sleep. We pay $3,600 a month in rent, and we have a nice bed and AC, and I feel like our place is nice, but we've been thinking about an upgrade for a while. It'd be nice if we had a porch. I think the bed is a little too soft for my taste, like a new mattress. But this bed of cardboard that I had made and received for free was pure grace, pure providence. It was given to me, and I felt such gratitude for it that it was overwhelming. I didn't want to fall asleep because I just wanted to lie there and enjoy what I'd been given. It reminds me of among maybe the oldest Buddhist prayer, the Metta prayer. I don't know. Is it the old? It might be the oldest. It's got a few versions in the Pali Canon, the first writings. And it goes like this. This is a translation by Tanisaro Bhikkhu. It goes, "Happy, at rest. May all beings be happy at heart. Whatever beings there may be, weak or strong, without exception, long, large, middling, short, subtle, blatant, seen and unseen, near and far, born and unborn, may all beings be happy at heart. And I thought, that's me. I'm worth taking care of. Whether I'm weak or strong, without exception, everybody deserves good meal, free goat cheese, a nice soft bed in a park, place to pee. Without exception, everybody deserves this. You don't have to earn it. You're not in anyone's debt. It's yours. And my friend Kim, when I was telling her this thought, she pointed out how frightening it is to allow yourself to think this. To allow myself to think that without earning it, I am worth taking care of. Because as she pointed out, that means that everybody else is too. Without exception, everybody deserves to be taken care of. And that is my responsibility. It's comforting to think that I can distinguish and judge. Some people deserve it, some people have earned it, some people haven't. I can concentrate on those who earn the right, the good ones. And the others can drop dead. But if everybody, weak or strong, long, large, middling, short, invisible, visible, Martians, sea creatures, Republican presidential candidates, without exception, if everyone deserves to be happy and free, what a huge responsibility. Seen and unseen, near and far, born and unborn. May all beings be happy at heart.
Thanks for listening. The Village Zendo relies on donations to make our talks and meditation space available. Please contribute at villagezendo.org.